Monday. Open wide dev fans.
Get ready
to stuff your face with JavaScript, CSS, node modules, barbecue tips, Git workflows, breakdancing, soft skills, web development. The hastiest, the craziest, the tastiest web development treats. Coming in hot, here is Wes, Barracuda, Boss, and Scott, El Toro Loco, Tolinsky.
Welcome to Syntax, and in this Monday Hasty Treat, we're all going to be talking about Wes's brand new website. The last time this website saw a refresh was sometime in 2014. So we're going to dive into all of the ideas and interesting things that Wes did with his new website. And we're going to be exploring some of the choices that he made and why he chose to do things his way. My name is Scott Tolinsky. I'm a developer from Denver, Colorado. And with me, as always, is the Wes Boss.
Hey, everybody.
Hey, Wes. This episode is sponsored by Sentry. Now, Sentry at sentry.io is the amazing error handling and exception tracking tool that you really need in your project. In fact, you're going to want to head over to sentry.io, use the coupon code TASTYTREAT, all lowercase, all one word. You're going to get 2 months for free. Let me tell you, it's really easy to just drop in Sentry in your project, see it up and running in no time, track those errors and exceptions. I've been using Sentry personally for a long time and am really, really into it. I just absolutely love this platform, and I wouldn't have it any other way for browsing and keeping track of the errors and bugs that are in my site. So thank you so much for Sentry for sponsoring. Now, Wes, this new website is at wesboss.com. Didn't you used to have another different URL, or am I tripping here?
No, I've never had it.
Weren't you at like boss.af, boss.af?
Boss.af is where I sell stickers.
Oh, okay. Yes.
Yeah. No, I've been on wesboss.com since March of 2004. And I remember asking for a domain name for my birthday. My birthday was in late February. So I've been on there for 16 years. I've been on wesboss.com, and it's obviously seen many iterations of a personal website over the years, probably, five or six different website designs. And my last one was built on WordPress my last couple that were built on WordPress. I probably was WordPress for about 10 years. And I had a setup with WordPress. I had lots of advanced custom fields. I used Less for styling. And there wasn't a whole lot of custom JavaScript, but for a lot of that, I did have jQuery on that. So that was the existing stack. The website was getting kind of slow. One huge pain point I had was anytime I would link to it in an email, I'm hosted on Bluehost, which we all know is my favorite hosting company ever. and they auto-scale their servers, which is great, but there's like a 5-minute delay when traffic spikes to when it auto-scales. So I would email out to 300,000 people, hey, here's a link to my website, and it would crash my server, and then it would come back up after 5 minutes because they would scale the server, which is great. But in that 5 minutes, how many thousands of emails do I get? Your website is down, which was frustrating, and obviously that was my own fault. Like, I should get a better server, but I just didn't feel like moving it on over. I thought about keeping it on WordPress because I like the admin for all of my blog posts and everything. But what I ended up doing is saying, I want to move all of my content to GitHub and have it editable by the community at large. Like, already I've had the site live for less than a day, and I've already received 9 or 10 different pull requests of spelling mistakes, corrections, nice, updating things. There was like somebody was reading like a 2-year-old blog post, and there was a mistake in there, and they fix it themselves. And it's really cool to be able to have that open to the world. So my stack that I chose was Gatsby.js. I'll talk about that a little bit more in just a sec. Style components and React and MDX. I'll talk about all these in just a sec, but that's the stack I chose. And I've been working over the last year or so, kind of just poking away at it here or there. I sort of settled on the design about 6 months ago. And that's where I was like, all right, next time I have about a week of time, I'm going to really double down and finish this thing on up. So what I thought we'd do is just kind of go through the different parts of the stack, why I chose it and why I didn't. I did also write a blog post similar to this So go to westboss.com, click on the blog, and you'll see it up there. So the stack Gatsby, it's static site generated, meaning that it generates the HTML beforehand, but it's also made in React so that after the initial page loads, just HTML and CSS, the React framework loads, and then it picks it up from there, meaning it sort of hydrates it, and then it's a full-blown React application. I didn't go for Next.js. That's probably the most common question I get, because when I started it, Next.js was more for like applications. They've since changed that. They now have a bunch of lifecycle methods for working with statically generated, which I think is the best way to do it because you can opt into statically generating page by page instead of like Gatsby is you're all in on everything is statically generated.
Right. Or it's dynamic. There wouldn't be like a server side rendered version because there's no node instance in Gatsby, at least right now. But there could be dynamic content. You're not necessarily locked into static.
No, you can have dynamic content, but if that's the case, then you have to totally go outside of the Gatsby GraphQL API and then host your own API somewhere or in a serverless function. And that's what I did for, I'll talk about that with some of the serverless functions. Although I just was tweeting with Kyle from Gatsby and he said, we're getting hosted GraphQL, which means that hopefully your Gatsby site will be able to refresh its data from the GraphQL API. So it's no longer just going to be static like that.
Is that a scoop that you got there?
Well, he tweeted it. So I'm going to say it's a scoop.
Oh, okay.
Because I had never heard of, I've never heard anyone talk about it before, but he just tweeted it to me out in the open. So it's not secret or anything.
I didn't know if you were into privy to some inside information here.
Oh, no. It's, I'm not that privileged. Just the guy
insider
tweeting and reading stuff. Yeah. The other thing is that Gatsby has a huge plugin ecosystem for things like sitemaps and I don't know, all kinds of images and whatnot. And Next.js, it's not that it doesn't have those. It's just that that's not the way that Next.js is set up. You just have to do that yourself and reach for existing React plugins. So it would be kind of cool one day to see how hard it would be to switch it over to Next. Not because I want to, just because I think it'd be interesting to see the pros and cons side by side for an actual full-blown website. All the blog posts, so I forget how many. Let me look, actually. Blog, 120 blog posts. Probably about 70% of those are still valid, and then the rest are just outdated content. But I feel weird like taking it down because it's the web, right? So I just kept all the blog posts there.
It's a history, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I had to move those over to Markdown. Most of them were already written in Markdown, which was great. But the whole process of moving it to MDX is really tough because like HTML is so forgiving. You goof up a tag or something like that, it just keeps going, right? But JSX is super unforgiving. You got one incorrect tag somewhere or you don't auto close an image tag, all of those things. So I wrote this massive script that just find and replaced all of those little gotchas. And then I finally, after a couple hours, was able to auto import every single blog post from my WordPress API. That's how I did it, is I just pinged in the WordPress API. I also took all my Twitter hot tips from Twitter and made those into pieces of content, which is great because like I personally can't even find my own hot tips when I want to find them. And it's like the hot tips is the huge piece of content for me. And the fact that I don't own those is weird to me. It started off as just a silly thing on Twitter, but like it's a big reason why I have so many Twitter followers and people absolutely love them. So like, why am I not owning this content?
Well, it's funny that we should talk. I mean, that's like a definitely like a topic of conversation. Maybe we could even elaborate on another Hasty Treat sometime is owning your content. I mean, we talked about this before in the blog things when we were saying like, okay, you could do a Medium blog and that's going to get you maybe findability initially because people will stumble upon it, but you're not owning that content and you don't have full control over it. And I agree with you that that's like something you need to own. And I'm psyched to see that you found this way to pull that all into your site.
Yeah, absolutely. Styling the design. I did the design all myself. I went for some of this like grunge texture. So there's two grungy PNGs that get loaded onto the website. And I twist and turn them and angle them and offset them enough that it looks like the grunge is fairly random. But I didn't want to have to load in grunge, absolutely, like five or six different grunge PNGs, because that would make the page load too heavy. So it's kind of fun to be able to do that. A lot of people are saying, like, why are my logo itself is a PNG? I designed it all in vector, except the grunge has to be raster. And a lot of people say, like, oh yeah, just use a SVG. And SVG grunge is not the same as a raster-based grunge. And I actually converted it to SVG, and the file size was like 10x what a PNG was, because of there was thousands of little paths for every little dust speckle. I'm using Operator Mono and Radnica Next as my fonts. Holeflare and Co. gave me free license of Operator Mono for the web, which was really cool, because I'd been like saying I use Operator Mono forever, and a lot of people had bought it after me. And it was on sale a couple months ago, and I tweeted out, hey, it's on sale. And then a couple days after that, I got an email from them saying, like, hey, do you want a free font for your website? And I was like, yes, please, because it's expensive.
Yeah.
I looked at the price. I think it was like $1,600 to get an unlimited usage license of this font. So, yeah, it's expensive.
Can we talk mono fonts for a minute?
Yeah.
I'm a big fan of these mono fonts as display fonts. Like, my entire website is one font right now, and it's Mono Lisa. And man, I really liked going to mono font for this.
Yeah, I did too. The Holeflare gave me a copy of Operator something, Sans. There's one that's not monospace. And I tried that and it just didn't feel good. I feel like it's pretty readable. I only had one person give me an angry tweet about it.
As a developer too, it gives that like vibe that like I'm a developer.
Totally. Yeah, I think so.
Do you know, we're obviously not talking about my site right now, but.
No, let's talk about it.
I used like IDE style ligatures in my design as the back arrows. So my back arrows are just a bracket and a line, and then as lit turn ligatures on. It was really nice.
That's beautiful. Oh, while we're talking about the fonts, so all of the headings, H1 through H6, all of the headings are actually pretty complex because it's an H3. And then inside of that, there's a before and after pseudo element that adds the black and white texture over top of the text. And one really cool trick is that like I had overlaid this black texture on, or sorry, I overlaid the white texture over top of the text because it's white on black text. And what happens is when you overlay elements on top of text is that it makes it unselectable. And I thought like, shoot. And obviously I just put on pointer events none on that grunge, and then the clicks go right through it and still allow you to select it. So that was a kind of a cool trick that I really liked.
Yeah, I like this. The grunge is super interesting here, how you chose to do that.
Yeah. My favorite part about it is if you select the text, the grunge is still on top of the highlighted text, which is pretty cool. Because I've always wondered, like, I wish you could do like background texture on the select, but you can't. But you can if you overlay something on top of that and then pointer events none.
Yeah, neat trick. Yeah.
There's also a little yellow square in the top left-hand corner, just kind of as a design detail. And one cool thing I did there is that the size of that square is done in M's. And the benefit of doing it in M's is that the size of the square goes up and down with the font size. So it's related to the font size of the heading tag. And that was a perfect use case for using M's over REMs, because it's based on the font size of the thing.
Yeah.
And it didn't have to size one for every H tag.
Yeah. Yeah. That's like, that's free right there. That's the dream of CSS.
Yeah. That's like, I always find it hard to find good use cases for M's over REMs, but there's one right there.
Yeah. Love it.
CSS is done in style components. I'd have a big global styles, and then every component, I just use a component for that. And then I'd put like sub selectors in there. So I still heavily use classes and tag selectors. inside of it. So I don't go crazy with style components and do a new style component for every little thing. I just, every general area, every general component, a post, a heading, a meta, that's its own component. And then inside of that, I use just like regular CSS selectors. And I'm pretty happy with that sort of balance there.
Cool. Did you say, I mean, you're using like BEM or anything like that for your actual selectors?
No, just, I don't think it's necessary to use something like that when you are using scope CSS, because I would just give something a class of like meta or a class of big, and I don't have to worry about those classes in other places because I know that I'm always writing scope CSS, and that's good. I don't have to follow some strict thing there.
Yeah. So in my set, I'm doing like scoped by default, right? That's just the way it is in Svelte. It's scoped by default. And then you choose when you want it to be global. And I really love, I mean, I'm typically used to writing styled components, but I really do love that scoped by default, because then you still get to turn the cascade on whenever you want it. And if you know what you're doing with CSS, it's like, all right, here's where I want the cascade. Here's where I want my globals. Here's where I want the baseline stuff. And then here's where I want things scoped. It makes it such a nice experience. I think some people look at scoped CSS as being like a, you know, for people who aren't good at CSS. And in my mind, it takes a lot of skill to execute with a scoped CSS and make it, you know, super dry and just nice to use. So
yeah, I love it.
A big fan of that.
Me too. It's just been really nice. And by default, like you said, scope by default, you write your styles, they're scoped to that component. And then if you want something to be global, like a lot of the fonts and variables and whatnot, then you can throw that in your global CSS.
Love it.
One kind of cool thing that MDX gives you is a couple things. MDX allows you to embed React components right inside of your markdown. So YouTube player embed component, if you want to put a graph, you want to put anything inside of your markdown, you can just embed a React thing and you can import and export values from your MDX files. But another kind of cool thing that MDX does is you can replace the components. So all of the headings and all of the code blocks and all of that, anytime there was a like an H2 tag, instead of rendering out an H2 tag, it would pass it off and I could supply my own custom component for an H2 tag. And that's how I got these like really complex headings without having to write the code every single time in my MDX file.
Nice.
Yeah. Serverless functions. So there's a couple things on the site that need to be on this on server side. Most common is the OG images. So if you share a URL out to Facebook or something like that, it will show you like a thumbnail. And the way I did that is there's a page on my website just called thumbnail. And then via the params, you pass the title, the URL, the image, the slug, all of that information about it. And then it just, I just laid out these thumbnails in HTML and CSS. And then I'm using a serverless function with Puppeteer, which is headless Chrome, to just take a screenshot of that and then serve that up to the user when they're asking for the Open Graph image.
Puppeteer, hey there, get fancy.
Yeah, it was really neat because like otherwise you'd have to use like a different program to make images. And I was like, I just want HTML and CSS. And then I want to take a screenshot of it. I don't want to have to like learn this other node package that's not as powerful as CSS to lay things out.
Yeah. You know, I've been thinking a lot about images and like, what's your strategy? I mean, it was so nice to have like in a CMS, like a drop zone, drop the image in. Are you just coding all the paths? I guess it's Gatsby. So you're doing the Gatsby image queries.
Yeah. So in almost everything, it's in Markdown, which does Gatsby image queries for you under the hood.
Oh.
And then I just put the images in the folder of the blog post, or I have a folder that has like pictures of me and there's a picture of Scott on the about page. So go check it out.
I saw that. Hey, thank you for including me on your site. That was very nice of you.
Oh, yeah.
I have your name and your link, but I don't have any photos on my site.
My wife was a little bit cheesed that you came before.
Oh, no.
So I use Gatsby image to compress and resize and everything like that. I'll talk about that was a bit of a pain in the butt in just a second. Serverless functions. Also, I'm pulling in tweets and Instagram posts and Instagram stories, and all three of those need to be done server side. They don't have CORS APIs. So I use serverless functions for that, which is pretty cool. I'm using them through Netlify because they have like a nice local thing called Netlify Dev, but they are just AWS Lambda. So they could really be hosted pretty much anywhere. It's just a node file.
Mm.
I'm pulling in my Instagram stories via sort of like a fake login. So I'm hitting their GraphQL API that's undocumented and then passing my session cookie along with it. And that gives me my stories because there's no API for Instagram stories if you are not a business or something like that. Like you're not a brand that is in with Facebook. So it's not something you can do.
Yeah.
And those, the tweets, Instagrams, and the podcast, the latest Syntax podcast gets pulled into the footer as well. All of those are done client side because you can't, if I were to do them at build time, then they would be
out of
stale
date.
By yeah. the, yeah, they'd be out of date. So that's like one thing. I was like looking like, how do I do it on build time and refresh it in the client? And the right. answer was like, you have to code two totally separate things, which sucks. So I think that's what the Gatsby hosted GraphQL API will fix. I bet there will be like a tag that says refresh on client, true. And then it will just ping this server for any updated content. It's hosted on Netlify. That worked really well. I actually, initially, it didn't build on Netlify or Render or... I tried it on a bunch of them. And one of the biggest pain points I had was that apparently I had too many images. I booked 350 images. And it would just fail and time out on every service that I tried. And it was just way too big, I guess. Like, I don't know what people who have larger websites than 300 pages are doing, because I know there's e-commerce websites out there.
Yeah.
So I talked to Jason, friend of the show, Jason Langsdorf, who he used to work at Gatsby, works at Netlify now. So who better to know everything about this stack? He hooked me up with this experimental thing called Gatsby Parallel Build, which throws your images out to Google Cloud or Google Cloud hosting. So sort of like serverless functions. I guess it is a serverless function. And then Google Cloud will just spin up 300 instances or something like that, resize each image individually, and then send it back. And that took my build time from about 25 minutes to about 5 minutes, which is pretty good. And then there's still another like 5-6 minutes of deploying after the build is done on Netlify, then it has to deploy. So it's about 12 minutes to get something from a Git push to being live on your website, which is okay. I kind of wish it was faster than that. Like I had like a bug on the website when I launched it. And in 12 minutes, like lots of people messaged me about the bug.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
So I kind of wish that it was a bit faster. I tried Gatsby Cloud, which is using this thing called Gatsby Incremental Builds, which I hope will be a thing for everybody at some point. And it was great because it took my entire build and then I changed like a word on a page and then it rebuilt it in a minute.
Mm.
And that is Gatsby smart enough to know not to rebuild the entire website, but just to rebuild the one page.
Yeah.
I think that Gatsby Cloud also does a similar parallel image processing. I just ran out of time to investigate all of that. So I'm just going to sit on my hands. And I bet that this will get better at some point because like it's not a big website, I don't think. It's a medium-sized website. And I think that a lot of other people probably have this pain as well.
Sure.
You can view source on it, which is really fun. It's all formatted nicely. I use a plugin from James Vickery. It's called Gatsby Plugin Prettier Build. He actually just built it after I was asking on Twitter, like, hey, are you able to format the outputted HTML from Gatsby? And the answer is no, because React DOM does that for you and it just puts it out. But he built this on post build. That's a hook in Gatsby. Once the build is done, you can run some code. And then he built this thing that would concurrently run the HTML files through Prettier and format them nicely.
Oh, nice.
And the view source is very readable now, which I was really happy about. What else do we have here? It's a lot of stuff that went into it, which is pretty cool. I think that's about it. Pretty happy with the site right now. It's a big driver for me. I had to maintain all of my old links because blog posts and Google search juice is a big part of my business. Lots of people find my blog posts by searching on Google, read a couple, and then buy a course after that. So I needed to make sure that that all went. I will see in a week or two what my stats look like once they've leveled off. Did they get better? Did they go down versus WordPress? Something like that. So I had to like make sure that the slugs got moved over from the old version as well. But overall, very happy. It's very fast. Like I didn't do much to make it fast. It just is fast out of the gate. And I felt like I didn't really have to give up too much or really anything in order to get that. So
nice.
I think the one thing I gave up was the build times because of the Gatsby images. The other thing is that everybody is going to say, why didn't you just use Cloudinary? And like Scott and I love Cloudinary, and Cloudinary will do the image resizing on demand for you, which is cool. And like, I love Cloudinary. I use it for my course platform. I just didn't want the build of this blog to be dependent on like a paid company. Like I wanted it to just work, even if you were offline. Right. I just wanted this whole thing to build and not have to like reach out for any external services. So that's why I, although obviously Gatsby Parallel Build uses Google Cloud, it will still build just fine with a regular Gatsby build. And that's what I wanted to maintain.
And once it's built, it's built.
What do you mean by that?
Like once it's built, it exists as an HTML, JavaScript. And like, it's not
you're right. Yes.
So it exists.
You're not relying on it. Although I guess you probably could use Cloudinary to just resize it and then save it locally. Jason Linksurf has a Cloudinary Gatsby image plugin that I think does something similar to that. So that certainly is an option. It's just that my traffic level, it would get real expensive real quick for something like that.
Yeah. You know, it's really easy to not have to worry about images when you don't have any. That was my strategy.
You don't have any. Hey,
you know what? I just don't even want to deal with it. Yeah.
That's great. Like, obviously, I couldn't do that, but I think it's because you are incrementally building your site. Yeah, that's probably a YouTube video for you, working on adding images to my site. Here are the options I have.
Here's why I don't have images.
Don't have images? Don't have problems.
Right, yeah.
All right, so I think that's it. I'm pretty happy with it. Check it out. It's on GitHub. It's all open source, so you can learn a thing or two from it. It's at github.com/WestBoss/WestBoss.
Nice. Cool. I thought this was awesome. I really enjoyed hearing about your site, especially because you did so many fancy, neat things on it. Love it.
Fancy guy. Fancy's my middle name.
Yeah.
All right. I think that's it, though. Thanks for tuning in, and we will catch you on Wednesday.
Peace.
Head on over to syntax.fm for a full archive of all of our shows. And don't forget to subscribe in your podcast player or drop a review if you like this show.